Haynes was the first to put together this picture. The reaction, he told me, was pretty gratifying. The fractious archaeological community embraced his ideas with rare unanimity. They rapidly became the standard model for the peopling of the Americas. On the popular level, Haynes's scenario made so much intuitive sense that it rapidly leapt from the pages of science to high school history textbooks, mine among them. 3 years later, in 1967, the picture was augmented with overkill. If time travelers from today were to visit North America in the late Pleistocene, they would see in the forests and plains an impossible bestiary of lumbering mastodon, armored rhinos, great direwolves, saber-toothed cats, and 10-foot-long glyptodonts like enormous armadillos. Beavers the size of armchairs, turtles that weighed almost as much as cars, sloths able to reach tree branches 20 feet high, huge flightless predatory birds like rapacious ostriches. The tally of Pleistocene monsters is long. At about the time of Clovis, almost every one of these species vanished. So complete was the disaster that most of today's big mammals, such as caribou, moose, and brown bear, are immigrants from Asia. The die-off happened amazingly fast, much of it in the few centuries between 11,500 and 10,900 BC. And when it was complete, naturalist Alfred Russel Wallace wrote, the Americas had become a zoologically impoverished world, from which all of the hugest and fiercest and strangest forms had recently disappeared. The extinctions permanently changed American landscapes and American history. Before the Pleistocene, the Americas had three species of horse and at least two camels that might have been ridden. Other mammals could have been domesticated for meat and milk. Had they survived, the consequences would have been huge. Not only would domesticated animals have changed Indian societies, they might have created new zoonotic diseases. Absent the extinctions, the encounter between Europe and the Americas might have been equally deadly for both sides, a world in which both hemispheres experienced catastrophic depopulation. Researchers had previously noted the temporal coincidence between the Paleo-Indians' arrival and the mass extinction, but they didn't believe that small bands of hunters could wreak such ecological havoc. Paul Martin, a paleontologist who was one of Haynes's Arizona colleagues, thought otherwise. Extinction, he claimed, was the nigh inevitable outcome when beasts with no exposure to Homo sapiens suddenly encountered a new and thoroughly superior predator, a hunter who preferred killing and persisted in killing animals as long as they were available. Imagine, Martin said, that an original group of 100 hunters crossed over Beringia and down the ice-free corridor. Historical records show that frontier populations can increase at astonishing rates. In the early 19th century, the annual U.S. birth rate climbed as high as 5%. If the first Paleo-Indians doubled in number every 20 years, a birth rate of 3.4%, the population would hit 10 million in only 340 years, a blink of an eye in geological terms. A million Paleo-Indians, Martin argued, could easily form a wave of hunters that would radiate out from the southern end of the ice-free corridor, turning the continent into an abattoir. Even with conservative assumptions about the rate of Paleo-Indian expansion, the destructive front would reach the Gulf of Mexico in 3 to 5 centuries. Within 1,000 years, it would strike Tierra del Fuego. In the archaeological record, Martin pointed out, this hurricane of slaughter would be visible only as the near simultaneous appearance of Clovis artifacts throughout North America, and the swift extermination of the more conspicuous Native American large mammals, which in fact is exactly what one sees.